Our third case is number 22-12354, Aileen Mullen versus the Secretary of the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. Mr. Radford.
May it please the court, my name is James Radford, and I'm here with my associate Zachary Panter, and we are proud to represent Aileen Mullen, who is here today with her daughter. This is an appeal related to an employment discrimination case brought under the Rehabilitation Act against the Department of Veterans Affairs. Ms. Mullen began to serve the Department of Veterans Affairs in 2009. Over the course of her time there, she developed severe respiratory illnesses, such as chronic allergic sinusitis and asthma. These conditions worsened progressively throughout the period of 2013, exacerbated by the poor air quality in the St. Petersburg regional office where she was assigned.
Can I ask you to clarify one thing before you move on to the rest
of
the argument? I think I'm right, but I want to make sure I haven't gotten your position incorrect.
Okay.
With regards to your second argument about the privacy violation via the unlawful disclosure,
yes, Your Honor,
that does not relate to her asthma and respiratory difficulties. It relates to the cancer diagnosis.
That's exactly right, Your Honor.
Okay, got it.
Go
right ahead.
The next part of my soliloquy actually was going to be to add to all of the respiratory illnesses that she was experiencing. In March of 2012, she was diagnosed with breast cancer, which required extended time off of work for treatment and recovery. I'd like to start with that claim. That is the claim related to the unlawful disclosure of information related to her breast cancer. That is the issue that first led her to contact an EEOC counselor with the Department of Veterans Affairs, which began the administrative process that ultimately led to this case. And that is a distinct issue, and so I'll start with that if that's okay with Your Honors.
Sure.
The evidence in the case is that in order to receive FMLA leave for surgery related to her breast cancer, Ms. Mullen was required to submit FMLA paperwork, which on the paperwork given to her by the VA and Human Resources and required for her to fill out, it requested specific information about her health condition, diagnosis, symptoms, treatment that she would need. And it is our position, and this is supported in the case law, that is an inquiry by the employer as to the employee's health condition.
The Rehabilitation Act allows an employer to require such information for FMLA leave, right?
Correct. Yes, Your Honor.
Your position is not that the requirement itself was improper, but that there was a disclosure of the information by somebody within Ms. Mullen's chain of command to somebody at the union, and that constituted the privacy violation.
Yes, Your Honor. So the Americans with Disabilities Act, which the courts have basically incorporated the protections of the ADA into the Rehabilitation Act, require that when the employer does make that sort of inquiry, they are then required to hold that information confidential. In other words, the employer is entitled to ask for that information, but then they have a duty not to disclose it outside of sort of a need-to-know basis. You can't gossip about it in the workplace and that sort of thing. This was a very sensitive issue to Ms. Mullen, obviously. This was a very private issue. It was reported to her HR office, and then she learned on the eve of actually going into her surgery that a union steward who was not at all in the chain of custody of who she would have submitted this information to had detailed information about her tumor and the sort of surgery that she was going to receive, and even offered to Ms. Mullen that the HR manager who disclosed it to him had opined that her breast cancer and her tumor, that was actually the reason why she was having all of the respiratory conditions. So there was some sort of misinformation packaged along with the wrongful disclosure. Ms. Mullen testified that this caused her great stress and anxiety, especially, you know, she's on the verge of going into surgery, a major surgery. Her life is at risk, and she learns that this information has been disclosed without her permission.
What do you, in terms of making out a violation for a privacy disclosure, what do you have to show in terms of effect to get some sort of relief?
Yes, Your Honor. So this court, in the case of Harrison versus Benchmark, that's 593 F3rd 1206, describes the sort of injury that the plaintiff has to suffer as, quote, pecuniary, emotional, or otherwise. So this court has specifically stated that emotional type injuries are a tangible harm for which a plaintiff may recover in a wrongful disclosure case. Ms. Mullen certainly testified that she had significant emotional distress as a result of this, and that is something that a jury ought to be able to assess. I will note, as a procedural point, the district court did not specifically address the issue. That is actually the point that the district court found against Ms. Mullen on, was that there was no injury. But her testimony was compelling.
Did it say so definitively, or it thought that it didn't think that there was a tangible injury?
Well, the court found that there wasn't. I mean, the court dismissed the claim on summary judgment, so, you know, thereby finding that she had not proven harm, which is an element of the offense, of the tort, so to speak. So there are other issues related to the disclosure claim that, because the district court did not make a finding as to the question of whether there was an inquiry or not, the court made sort of a flippant comment that the court is not convinced there is, but it was in a footnote.
I mean, if we were to find that your client has shown a tangible injury, we would remand on that issue.
Yes, Your Honor. Right. Correct. And so the district court could theoretically make additional factual findings on the question, was there an inquiry? So that, you know, whereas there in the briefing, there's some back and forth as to what the law is on that issue, but because the district court did not make a specific finding as to that, it's really not ripe for this court to decide. The court doesn't have to decide that question. That would be up to the district court on.
So you don't want us to do that, even though it's basically application of law to facts at summary judgment? I mean, facts are pretty much undisputed as to what happened.
Right.
Historically.
Correct.
Right? The VA required the submission of an FMLA form.
Yes.
That required certain medical information about the condition, the diagnosis, yes, the treatment, et cetera.
Yes.
Ms. Mullen filled it out or had her doctor fill it out, submitted
yes.
it.
Yes.
And then there was a disclosure.
Yes.
You want all that to go back to the district court?
Well, we want to have a trial on that issue.
I know, but if you go back to the district court, you may or may not have a trial on that issue.
Well,
if the district court rules against you on whether or not there was an inquiry,
yes, Your Honor,
then you're back up here again.
Yes, sir, and I'm absolutely prepared to address that point. So there's a
I'm just asking you. I'm not pushing you one way or the other.
Well,
you want that issue sent back to the district court if we agree with you on the injury portion?
No, Your Honor, I would like you all to decide this issue. The Doe case, which is a U.S. Postal Service case in the D.C. Circuit, addresses this issue square on as to whether an FMLA form that the employee is required to submit in order to receive medical leave, whether that is an inquiry under the Rehabilitation Act. And the court said, yes, of course it is, because if the employee does not submit that information, the penalty to that employee is that they will not receive the leave. So they are truly compelled to provide that information by their employer. There are cases that the agency cites. This is the Taylor case and the Lee case. That's a Fifth and a Sixth Circuit cases. Those cases are both very different. Those are putative class actions filed by police officers related to a police department's sick leave policy, which was not exclusive to FMLA and was not exclusive to a situation like this where an individual is requesting an accommodation in the form of medical leave and completes FMLA paperwork related to that. In those cases, the court said there's not a Rehabilitation Act violation because everyone who applies for sick leave, whether it's you have a cold or because you have a serious disability, has to present doctor's information to the police department. And while that may tend to reveal information about some employees who have a disability, it's not specifically going to reveal a disability and therefore would not implicate the Rehabilitation Act. I see my time has expired, if I may.
May I ask a question?
Of course.
Let's assume that even if the FMLA certificate is an inquiry under the ADA, can you talk about why it would be an inquiry under the Rehabilitation Act?
Yes, Your Honor.
Because they're a little different, are they not?
Yes, Your Honor. So there's a language in the Rehabilitation Act that refers to a discrimination solely on the basis of disability, and courts have said that is a higher causation requirement versus the ADA. ADA requires but-for causation, whereas the Rehabilitation Act requires sole causation. And so courts have said that, for example, in the Taylor case and the Lee case, in which you're dealing with a sick leave policy that applies to anyone who asks for sick leave, again, whether it's for a disability or whether it's for a cold or whatever it is, that is not an inquiry based solely on disability. It could relate to non-disability related issues. The reason FMLA is different is because it is, by its very nature, if someone is requesting extended time off of work for a serious medical condition, that is a disability as defined certainly under the amendments to the ADA, which have an expansive view of disability. The point of FMLA leave is not standard sick leave because I have a cold, it's because I have a quote unquote serious medical condition that requires me to be off of work. So this case is more like the Doe case in that there is a specific nexus between the disability and the request for FMLA leave.
But technically, the anti-disclosure provision is contained in section 12112D4 of the ADA, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
The way you get that in a Rehabilitation Act claim is through 29 U.S.C. 791F and 794A, or 794D, right?
And that's the statute that incorporates. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Ms. Sweeney.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Sarah Sweeney on behalf of the Secretary.
Pull that mic down.
I'm sorry, sir. Thank you. Is that better? Okay. So I would like to start with Judge Jordan. I think you asked, on what basis did the district court reject this claim below? And basically what the court said below was that Ms. Mullen had only presented a scintilla of evidence that she had actually suffered any damages. So I would like to start with that point and then go to the inquiry point second, if that's acceptable to the court. I want to note specifically what Ms. Mullen said during her deposition below about the harm that was caused by this disclosure. And the court can find that at Doc 32-2 at page 93. She said, Bonnie, and that's Ms. Wax, the HR representative who told the union representative about the cancer, at least as far as what this email shows. I want to make one point on that, which is that if you read the email itself, it does not read like Mr. Crump has just learned about the breast cancer. He doesn't express surprise. He doesn't express concern for Ms. Mullen's health. It reads like someone who has known about this. Understood that that's not really the main point here. So, but then turning to what Ms. Mullen did say about what this caused her. Bonnie had to interject her issues around the building and defending the building. I went under anesthesia worried about Bonnie Wax and what she was going to do to me. I came out of anesthesia that way. What the anxiety did to my body and my brain and her callousness. So essentially what Ms. Mullen presents here is not that she was harmed by Mr. Crump knowing about her breast cancer. What she felt she was harmed by was Ms. Wax, who was the head of HR, knowing about her breast cancer. And that was not a, Ms. Wax knowing was not any kind of an unlawful or unallowed disclosure. So her,
I was worried about Ms. Wax because Ms. Wax was starting to disseminate.
Understood, but what that she doesn't actually say that, Your Honor. She just says she's worried.
You're at summary judgment.
So then
you're not
understood.
You're, the district court is not allowed to weigh evidence.
And this when isn't about and when the it, sorry.
What if she had said in answer to a question at deposition, I was floored, distraught, terrified, overwhelmed by this disclosure and the knowledge that someone else, not at my employer, would know about my condition? Would that get her past summary judgment on the injury point?
I believe it would, Your Honor, because it would tie
directly.
And
what you read did not?
No, because she doesn't tie anything to the disclosure. It's all about Ms. Wax's knowledge, which is not allowed under the Rehab Act.
No, it's not just the knowledge. It's what she did with the knowledge.
So then,
what she's going to do to me. Isn't that the language you read?
What she was going to do to me. But
what would she do? What would she do to her with that knowledge?
I don't know what Ms. No,
what she did with Mr.
Clarified.
Crump.
Well,
what
so
she
then,
did with Mr. Crump, which is to disseminate.
So then, Your Honor, then I think you look at what happens next. And so this is around the beginning of May. And so by the end of June, a request for leave donations is sent out to the entire group at the VA there, at that VA facility, asking for leave donations for Ms. Mullen. And it included her breast cancer diagnosis in there. So even if you want
but
to think about...
But that's a voluntary decision by her.
So, but if you want to think about damages, it's still... That
just means your damages are less.
Damages are limited. I mean...
That just means you have a... That just means, theoretically, you have a weaker case for Ms. Mullen on the amount of damages. She had a shortened period of time. At some point, she decided, because she wanted to get into the leave donation bank, to disclose, and she made a voluntary disclosure of her own free will. So that just means you have a truncated portion of time for damages, and you may not have a whopper of a case in terms of liability for the jury.
I think it shows, Your Honor,
you're at summary judgment.
I think it shows there's no damage. I mean, I understand.
I think you should, I'm only speaking for myself. I think you would be best served by going to the inquiry argument, because let's assume that there is a tangible injury.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Absolutely. So I think that my colleague has identified the key cases in this area, and he is correct that the secretary would ask that you rely on Lee and Taylor from the Fifth and Sixth Circuits rather than the Doe case from the D.C. Circuit. I think where we part ways is our understanding about what an FMLA form requests. If you'd like to see the FMLA form that Ms. Mullen filled out in March, which is the subject of this, that's at doc 32-2 at 491. And you can see from the face of the form itself that it asks about things that are beyond disability. And in fact, I found this on the Department of Labor's website. The FMLA's definition of a serious health condition is broader than the definition of a disability, encompassing pregnancy and many illnesses, injuries, impairments, or physical or mental conditions that require multiple treatments and intermittent absences.
But isn't the issue here, like when you look at that, that a reasonable jury could maybe find that questions that are on that particular form are likely to elicit information concerning Ms. Mullen's alleged disability?
I think the question, Your Honor, under the Rehab Act, according to the logic set forth in the Fifth and Sixth Circuit, it's not whether it's likely or possible. It has to be intended to or certain to, like necessary to disclose those things under the Rehab Act, according to the analysis in those cases, because of the Rehab Act's requirement that actions be taken solely on the basis of disability.
What did this form request?
It requests a description of why someone is seeking Family Medical Leave Act approvals. And as the
That broadly, or it asks for the condition, the diagnosis, the treatment, et cetera?
It asks a doctor to provide some kinds of different information, including how often do you expect the employee will be out? Can the employee perform their work obligations during this time? Asks for how long the condition is expected to last.
Asked for the condition?
Yes, it did. But as because not all conditions are disabilities, and that is the driving distinction, and why this FMLA form is like the leave restrictions, which I agree those cases did not involve FMLA
You're
forms.
You're saying you do the inquiry analysis based on what's returned?
No, you do it based on the form itself, Your Honor.
The form itself is asking for the information.
But the form itself does not necessitate or intend for a disability to be disclosed.
The way you can figure it out is by doing it at the back end to see what was returned on the form.
No, you look at what's intended as it goes out, Your Honor. Like, is it intended or required that a disability be disclosed? And this is a widely available form that's used for all types of things, including pregnancy and other conditions, as is explained by the Department of Labor.
So if you have, have a pregnancy that's high risk, you have preeclampsia or you have high blood pressure and potentially, is that not potentially a disability if you're gonna be out for 6 months and you have to be on bed rest?
I don't believe it, Your Honor, I don't actually know if pregnancy can ever be considered a disability legally. I don't think in general it is. Instead, you get the entitlement to the Family Medical Leave Act, which enables you to take 12 weeks of leave that you can then use while your pregnancy, you know, continues. That's the goal of it. It does not intend or necessitate a disability before someone is entitled to FMLA leave.
So your position is that an FMLA form can never be an inquiry?
That is correct, Your Honor, under the Rehab Act. And so the DC case addresses the ADA, which has a lower linkage requirement, and it can apply where the form...
But doesn't the Rehabilitation Act incorporate a fair number of the ADA's remedial provisions through Section 791 and 794?
Yes, Your Honor, except for the requirement that the solely requirement, which exists only under the Rehab Act. And I think that's set forth in the Ellis case that's cited in the VA's brief. If there are no further questions, the Secretary will rest on its brief and ask that.
Well, I do actually have a question.
Yes, Your Honor.
I just want to understand this inquiry argument that you're making. So 112D protects the confidentiality of the information received from an inquiry that pertains to an employee's disabilities.
Yes, under the ADA, yes. And then it's applied to the Rehab Act through the sections that Judge Jordan has referenced.
Right. Under D4B, you can make an exception for inquiries.
Yes.
Okay. But under 4C, you have to keep those inquiries confidential.
Yes.
And so it's your position that under that form, you had no, this was not an inquiry, the FMLA form.
It's not an inquiry legally under the Rehab Act because it is not intended or necessary that someone disclose a disability by the form itself.
But if the form is encompassing so as to require disclosure and information about something which may or may not be a disability, why isn't that an inquiry?
Because the Rehab Act only addresses things that are solely directed towards disability.
In terms of discrimination, I can understand that, but this is not a discrimination provision.
Right.
It's a privacy disclosure provision.
But in that, the Rehab Act is limited to things that are directed solely, not just discrimination, but things that are directed solely to disability.
To the disability.
Yes, to, yes, Your Honor. Thank you, Your Honors. We will rest on the brief on the other issues. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much.
May it please the court, with reference to the...
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, absolutely.
I'm just trying to understand this. Under my understanding, so there's the Lee case and the Taylor case, correct? That talks about the, you're not in my brain, I'm sorry, on the inquiry and the rehabilitation and the application of the Rehabilitation Act to this, the analysis of whether or not it's an inquiry.
That's correct.
Okay. So...
Those are not cases about an FMLA form, just to be clear.
Okay. Are there any cases that deal with an FMLA form and the Rehabilitation Act? Is that the Doe case?
The Doe case, yes.
Okay.
That case fits like a glove for this. Okay.
So we would, if we went the other way, we would create a circuit split.
If you went the other way, you would create a split between you all and the D.C. Circuit. Yes, okay. Your Honor. Yes. One point about this case. So this case doesn't require the court to decide whether.
Keep your voice up.
Oh yes, Your Honor. This case doesn't require the court to decide in every instance whether an FMLA type inquiry would be an inquiry under the Rehabilitation Act. In this specific case, there is no question that the leave that she sought, and the employer knew this, was for a serious medical condition that was going to require her to be out of work for some time and was going to require serious physical implications on her body. So it under the way that the ADA defines disabilities, especially in light of the 2008 amendments, in this instance, there's no question that the inquiry made by the FMLA form would necessarily reveal information to the employer about a disability. And again, not just to some medical issue that doesn't rise to the level of disability. So I think the ruling that the agency is seeking to make is one that this court that doesn't fit the facts of the case and would be a much broader sort of ruling than is necessitated by this case.
Ms. Sweeney says that a case like Doe isn't really persuasive because the form here could have encompassed conditions that are not disabilities and therefore wouldn't come within the purview of the Rehabilitation Act. Can you respond to that?
Well, certainly not in this instance, because the inquiry, the way you get an FMLA form is you tell your employer, I have a serious medical condition that is going to require me to be out of work for an extended period of time.
Right.
And then they say, okay, here's the specific information we need from you in order to evaluate that request.
Well, it may not be just for you. You could also be for a family member, correct?
That's true. That's true. And so that would be a different case.
The adoption
case
of a child or...
That's the sort of care for other provisions of the FMLA. But that's not this case. This is a case in which the employee says to the employer, I have a serious medical condition.
Well, I understand that in this case, but it's not across the board. I guess we're trying to see if we had to write an opinion, what would be the bright line test or the bright line rule here? And that's sort of why we're making these kind of inquiries.
Yes, Your Honor. If I was writing the opinion, I wanted to be conservative, I would limit it to the facts of this case, because I don't think you would. There'd be no need to say in every instance in which there is a FMLA request, because like my friend points out, there could be, like you point out, there could be a care for other type issue that may not implicate the Rehabilitation Act. But in this case, when the employer is specifically made aware, the reason for my request is for my own serious medical condition that is so serious that I will be out of work for an extended period of time, and then Their response is to give you a form that states specifically on the form, describe medical facts, including the condition, the symptoms, the diagnosis, any regimen of continuing treatment, such as the use of specialized treatment. That's the kind of information in context of this specific inquiry that necessitates the employee to reveal sort of information about a serious medical condition that rises to the level of disability.
But I think her argument, if I understood it correctly, goes a little bit deeper, which is if the form isn't asking about a condition that constitutes a disability, it's not an inquiry.
If it was not.
And I think the argument goes, under the FMLA, you can ask for leave for things that don't constitute a disability. In other words, you may have an operation that requires a long period of convalescence, and you need FMLA leave, but once the surgery is done and the period of convalescence is done, you're back up to new, and you can go back to work.
Right, but that example, that would absolutely be covered under the ADA. If you had a physical condition that required you to be off work in order to continue working, you know, I need some leave due to my serious medical condition. That is what the ADA means when they talk about a reasonable accommodation. I'm sorry, the ADA, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yes. So I can't think of
the FMLA and the ADA are not, I mean, they're concentric circles that overlap to a large degree, but they're not one and the same.
Correct, Your Honor.
You can have some things that come within the FMLA that are not ADA covered, right?
That's something we could debate about. I think with respect to the, certainly in the instance where it's care for another, absolutely. If the question is, the FMLA requires that you have a serious medical condition that will put you out of work for an extended period of time, and I would have to rack my brain to think creatively, can I think of an example where that would not be
a disability.
An ADA qualifying disability? And I'm an ADA advocate, and so I...
Or in a serious car accident.
ADA. I break my arm, I need to be off, leave.
Well, it depends how long you need to be out for, right? Because if you have a certain type of a broken arm, a fracture, let's say, and you get it set, you could theoretically go back to work.
The next day.
And you take a week of leave that you already have, you don't want to submit the paperwork from FMLA leave, and you go back to work, and you don't need your left arm to work. You work at a desk, that broken arm is not a disability under the ADA, right?
Well, if you need the leave, I think it is a disability because you're asking your employer to accommodate you.
No, the hypothetical is you take accrued leave that you have for a week. You don't want to go through FMLA. You just take a week. You've got 5 weeks accrued.
Right.
You just take a week, and then you come back after a week.
Yeah, I guess...
Maybe we're at too granular a level.
Yeah, I would preface any answer to this by saying I don't think the court has to resolve these sort of issues of whether the ADA covers temporary injuries and that sort of thing to resolve this case, which the employer is on plain notice that this is not that sort of situation. So I would just close by saying under the facts of this case, the sort of inquiry that the employer made falls squarely within what the Rehabilitation Act contemplates.
Thank you both very much. It's been helpful. We're in recess until tomorrow.